This is John Frame for This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine, chatting with Wason Choi, author of Not Yet, at the Brisbane Writers Festival. Wason, welcome.
Well, thank you.
You're an openly gay Canadian, and there are plenty of openly gay Canadians, but an exceptionally well-acclaimed writer. And as an older man, also, you've got a wealth of life experience, but what you're writing about particularly in Not Yet is in surviving near-death experiences. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the book, as you know, is called Not Yet, and I was commissioned to write it because I've had two experiences of dying, quote-unquote, and it was a book about, in the end, a love story about what it means to die and be a gay man. And you have to know that I was born in 1939. I'm 70 years old. As long as I can remember, I was always told you have to get married or who will take care of you when you're old and sick and on and on and on. And during the time I grew up, the pioneer war years of Vancouver's Chinatown, you know, that was drilled into our head. I was the male member of the family, the only son, so I was to be married, make sure I have enough children, be taken care of. And this book is about in 2001 when I had two traumas, an asthma attack, in the middle of which I also had a heart attack. And I was 2 months in the hospital and 6 months of repair work afterwards. And then I had a second episode 4 years after that, and I had a quadruple bypass. And I asked myself, I've survived, what does it mean? So I decided when someone asked me, would I write about these experiences, I said, yeah, I will. I have to know what it means.
When you had your heart attack, you actually also experienced the effect that many people have of having a stroke as well. You had to go through a full recovery of learning how to talk,
yes,
and write.
I was given an induced kind of coma because they had to put a ventilator down my throat to animate my lungs. They were going into paralysis because of the asthma attack. And on the third day, as they were raising and lowering my levels of consciousness, I started thrashing about, and I had my heart attack combined with all this. And it was a semi-coma state most of the time. They control the levels of consciousness so they can make sure they're not damaging the brain. If I go too deep, then they may not be able to bring me back. So I had hallucinations. I heard from voices from my past who said, why aren't you married? And, you know, and nevertheless, don't surrender, keep going. It's amazing because in the end, this book turned out to be a love story. It is about myself being single, but sharing my life with two families, extended family members. Now, I'm Asian, but my extended family members are Caucasian. And I have a country family, husband and wife, and their two children are my godchildren. I have a city family, the husband and wife, and their daughter is my godchild. And with the country family, I've been together for about 48 years. And the city family, I've been together for about 26, 27 years. And, you know, I want to, in this book, in a way, I didn't realize it, but I'm discovering, as I'm talking about the book, people are telling me as if they're coming out of a closet. I'm gay, but I have my own family too, and you've just made me realize these are my family. Because I think many gay people, until recently when we were allowed same-sex marriage and all this, or the idea of it anyways, if our families rejected us or if we grew old and they were gone, we were to assume to be alone. We had no family. Well, I can't tell you what it means to me. The people that showed up 24 hours of the day, taking their turn to be with me, made me realize that family is who loves you, which is one of the themes of my book. But above and beyond that was my deeper understanding that if we're talking about love, love has no rules. And people who grew up in my generation, and you recall I'm 70 years old, always thought, well, family is strictly blood and you have to be purely Chinese or Catholic or Irish or Protestant or Jewish or whatever. That's how I grew up. And I was an in-betweener. I became a banana. Born in Canada, in a Caucasian colonial culture, I grew up thinking more British literature than Chinese Cantonese opera. And in that sense, I was always an in-betweener. I didn't quite feel I belonged. I wasn't purely this or purely that. There came a time, though, when I wrote my first book, The Jade Peony, in 1995, that I have a story to tell, and it is about all of us who are in between, including those of us whose sexual orientation is part of that, interlocked oppression of being a race, racial quality in a racist society at the time I was growing up, and never mind the sexual biases. And all in all, I thought, gee, I do have something to write about. And I had the pleasure of writing that book, discovering what it meant to be different, even from your own kind, quote unquote, because as a gay man, I'm also a minority in a Caucasian gay culture. So I just thought, you know, so many things are not yet, and I'm not dead. I've almost died twice. What does it mean? And there came a time after the first dual attacks, the asthma and the heart attack, I recovered enough to go back from my home in Toronto to my birth home in Vancouver, British Columbia, and two ghosts showed up in a restaurant. I don't understand it. You know, I wrote for that part of the book, ghosts are everywhere, but I do not believe in them. And yet, I ended up, having an exorcism, not Hollywood style, very gentle, very sweet Buddhist style, to try and understand what this all meant. I never saw the ghosts. They were seen by the hostess of a restaurant that I patronized quite often. She saw them and was able to describe them to me, and these two ghosts were from my past. I was just stunned. One of them was a boy who was 19 when I was 16, 17 years old, and he befriended me. And this was before I was aware consciously of being gay or any of that. And you have to remember, this was the 1950s when nobody had sex. And the language for sex was so, just dirty, never mind anything that was gay. I just knew that wasn't me. But I so was sure that nothing was me at that time, being quite innocent of my state of being. My first three affairs were with women because I literally didn't know. And I'm that generation who was told when I went to university finally and took psychology, the course on Freud suggested that at a certain stage of growing up, people have same-sex affections and crushes, but it's a passing stage. It's part of maturing, and it's a passing phase. And, you know, that helped me rationalize my situation with the woman I was with and the growing up, and finally, eventually, with Stonewall and all this, my own consciousness was raised. But I tell you, if it is a phase, I'm 70 and I'm waiting. And I tell you, I'm happy it hasn't passed. Yep. I'm very pleased about my own life and who I am. So there I was, an in-betweener, a banana, all of this.
And this banana, that's like yellow, that's in Chinese on the
inside. Right. You know, and Caribbean people, when I talk about this, because I do a thing on racism, they tell me, oh, you're talking about our Oreo cookies. And that's black on the outside and white on the inside, because I went from growing up wanting to be part of the Cantonese opera company of old Chinatown. I wanted to be a warrior, one of those beautiful people who on stage wore great clothing and jumped and hopped and skipped and sword play. And then I saw cowboy movies and I wanted to be white and ride on a horse. So I became quite banana. And then when we were assimilated into being Canadians, because in 1947, Chinese people were given the right, especially those who were born here, to be Canadian citizens, here being, of course, Canada. And what was interesting was at that time, I didn't really think much more about that except, well, that's fair, I am Canadian, so I thought, but I never felt right in those shoes. And shortly after my first dual trauma, not only did the ghosts appear, but I had a chance to make a film in China. And it was about a writer in search of Confucius. And the pressure for me when I was going to China was that when you go to China, you'll see how Chinese you are, and you'll know you're Chinese because you know all this. And all the elders who were still alive, they were just barely able to contain themselves because I always said, I'm Canadian. But more than being a Canadian, I was an in-betweener. And I stood in front of the temples of Confucius, tributes to Confucius and so on. And in a genealogy house where it's the longest one in written history of the people who were born since the time of Confucius in that bloodline. And I looked around and I thought, you know what? I'm a tourist here. I'm in China admiring the philosophy, the art, the temples, the sculptures, the paintings. I'm a tourist. I am a Chinatown boy. I'm a gay man. I am my own person, and I'd rather have a fortune cookie. And so really, not to trivialize anything, but you know, a fortune cookie, which people think is Asian, is really created and invented in San Francisco, apparently. So I just want to declare the right of everybody to be whoever they are and realize that if they're in between anything, my gosh, when I knew I was going to die at one point, I thought, you know, I've had the best of both worlds. I am a bridge to two cultures. I'm at a banquet table where all my life I have been given the right in Democratic Canada to choose what I need and to respect and leave behind what I didn't want from either culture. And then there was fusion, which makes Canada and much of America now a multicultural possibility, a glimpse of heaven. So there I was, and I just had all these experiences, and I felt I needed to get this down on paper. So I wrote, not yet, because I'm still here.
Now, but the remarkable thing that many people will appreciate about reading this, especially as the population becomes older increasingly, and is less fit. Most people are going to have to deal with these heart issues. I myself, a month or so ago, I had an experience with angina that was sort of irregular, and and it just puts you completely on edge. And once it's happened, you just know that each more day you're skating on thin ice.
Absolutely. Actually, however old you are, doesn't matter. But certainly when you're at my age, at the what I call the other end of the rainbow, you have to really accept something about your life that makes sense of your life. I'm not religious. When I wrote this book, I thought, well, what do I have to say? And Oprah won't phone because, you know, I didn't have a great conversion to this, that, or whatever. I was a sinner and now I'm a saint. That would never happen. So all I knew was I wanted to write this book just to understand what it is to be oneself, and above all, to discover that family is who loves you. During the AIDS crisis in Canada, as in the United States, many AIDS victims, I call them, because simply who can say who was lucky or unlucky? But if you were unlucky, sometimes during that panic of that illness, people deserted you, friends couldn't go near you, family might even drop you. But then there were those who came to be with you. I've spoken about this because as a gay man, I think I want all of us who have unique relationships that are deeply, deeply meaningful to us, we should realize, as I realize, that's not for everybody maybe, but family is who loves you. And I remember being beside some of the patients who were thinking they were deserted and alone. I realized I couldn't be anywhere but with them. And I sometimes said, you know, I know you're going through a difficult time, but I want to be with you. I want to be here. I like to think I'm family. And sometimes the tears would flow. Sometimes, I don't know what the feeling was, but it made me feel we had the right to call each other who we were when we needed each other, which was family. And it's not simply to just make it sweeter. I think truly there is a situation where human beings have no other reason but to be family. And that's the only word. It shouldn't depend on bloodline or on being straight and logically, you know, officially okayed by religion or by civil law. It is human beings making contact when it matters. And I think my book then is a love story. When I was in the hospital, many people signed up to come and see me. They're allowed to come into the ICU if they're family. I had so many people come, including my extended family members, and only two of them were Asian. And I remember one of the nurses were cutting back the numbers because it was getting a bit much, and they had to, and I understood that. So I gave them the names of the people that were, you know, living with me. And then she said, but, you know, they all call themselves family, and there's only two of them that look Asian, Mr. Choi. And I said, oh, really? Well, you know, I hope you don't mind, but they all look Asian to me. And she laughed, and she said, I get it. And I said, yes, they're family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very lovely moment.
Now, there's one element that it's a repeat topic on the Oprah program, is decluttering so that you can get on with your life. Now, for yourself, now I do this, my room is overburdened with things that, but you write on page 93, you say, abundance means potential?
Yes, potential, possibility. I used to think that I must be obsessive compulsive. I have to admit, one of my friends says to people that know me, I love the first 10 of everything Wason has. But I find things, I'm a stationary freak for one thing. I find that I'll be writing letters on this. I can see me using the envelopes. I can see me licking the beautiful stamps I collect, the pens I will write with, and so on and so forth. And my accumulation has to do with the idea, when Santa Claus, I blame Santa Claus, by the way, it's a good one to blame, because I never had Santa Claus until my mother and father, who were directly from China, lived with my modern aunt and uncle. And they decided to treat me to the idea of Santa Claus. And one day when I was almost 6 years old, we had Christmas. And I woke up, I didn't know what Christmas was, I just knew Christmas was, you know, because every time I got a present, my mother would open it right away. We just opened the presents as they arrived. Well, we did a little bit of that, but suddenly one day I woke up and there was everything I had thought I would like for Christmas or for a toy that I had talked about, everything. Wagons and mechanical sets and this and that, game and cowboy outfit. I thought, this is wonderful. I have options. I will always have this. So I've taught some of my godchildren this. The parents blame me. I always say to them when they go out and say, no, you want to take 3 books. You don't just want to take 1 book. You want options. What if you got bored with that one? Take 3 of it. Take a half a dozen. You know, you want to take some toys. Here's a bag for you. Here, carry 5 of them and 6 of them. And I don't see why not. You can't have it all, but it's time that you got as much as possible. You know, it's like eating great food, and people always say, oh, I'm on a diet, and I always say to them, please, you know, you're going to be thin forever. Enjoy. Of course, I went overboard, and I had my heart attacks because it was probably bad diet, bad living habits, but a good time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the actual, the cover of Not Yet features a hummingbird, and that's significant because this is the very closing scene of the book.
Yes.
And yet, what is observed with the hummingbird, there's a hummingbird who tries to attack its own reflection and collapses, but the instruction is, no, don't try to pick it up. Don't help.
No, give it a chance to find its own consciousness. I think that's what it meant. I didn't understand it symbolically. I just wrote it, actually, because it came to me as a very moving image when I was recovering with my goddaughter in Arizona. She's a nurse in Arizona. And it was just incredible. I was sitting in her backyard in the comfortable chair, and suddenly I heard this beating, 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 beating. It was a buzz beat, and it was like when I had my heart attack, and I felt it, and I began to panic. I thought, oh no, I'm having another. But then my goddaughter came to the veranda, and she saw me looking absolutely confused, and she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I think I'm having it. But listen, can you hear this?" And it dawned on me, and she said, "Turn around slowly." And I turned around, and there was a hummingbird sort of buzzing towards me and back towards me and back. And apparently I had moved my chair right underneath the feeding stall that she had for the hummingbirds, this little thing filled with honey liquid. And so she said, "Just move away slowly." And I did. And then it just flew up and went on about its business. And I was dazzled. And suddenly its mate was attacking the glass doors on the veranda, and it smashed into itself, its own image, and collapsed. And I was going, "Oh my gosh," and I wanted to pick it up. And my goddaughter said, no, don't, leave it alone, because you don't want to touch it. It'll be okay. If it's okay, it'll be okay. If it's not, then we'll have to do something. And we waited for a few moments, and it kind of buzzed around, shook itself up, hopped, and then went up into the air, looked around to see if he was okay, I guess, I don't know, and then flew back to be with its mate. And so I thought to myself, yeah, I've had a bump, and I've smashed, and I'm up, and hummingbirds seem to disobey the rules of flight, because until we understood how that worked, you know, in terms of physics, it was always amazing to see them go up, down, sideways, however they do it. And I thought, that's like my life. That's like my life. It's like love itself, too. You have a crash now and then, and you better just pick yourself up, and you surely learn something. And in the end, that image came to me, and I realized that we're still in flight. I'm okay. I'm in flight.
It's been lovely chatting with you, Wei-Sun Choi, author of Not Yet, here at the Brisbane Writers' Festival.
Thank you for having me.
This has been John Frame for This Way Out.